Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the committee. I'm waiting for my superpower. There it is, my gavel. We are just short of a quorum, but we're going to get there. I wanted to give folks a little extra time to shuffle in because some of us didn't get to see family, kids, spouses as we got done late last night. So thank you, everybody, for your patience. I will officially call us to order as soon as our quorum is here, but I would like to get us started, and I'd like to give you a little roadmap of the day. We will be taking official action, and that is moving a bill, one bill to committee, and then, three bills to committee, and then we will be laying over all the liquor bills for possible inclusion into a liquor omnibus bill, and I will be working with my Senate counterparts on that. So that is our roadmap for the day. Because it is a Friday, because a storm is coming, we're going to try to move as swiftly as possible. So we're going to ask testifiers to keep their testimony to 2 minutes as much as possible, and stay in contact with your individual members on issues as well outside of this committee. So not saying we don't want to hear from you, but we do want to be as efficient as possible and get people on the road before the snow begins. With that, Representative Lean. Speaking of people we want to get on the road, he needs to go to Moorhead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
Of course. And welcome to the committee. We are still just waiting for a quorum, so we won't take action on your bill until we have our quorum, but we would like you to introduce your bill today. So to House File 239, please. 293. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, I appreciate you hearing this bill today, House File 293. House File 293 would cut the combined net receipt tax rates for charitable gaming organizations. The current rates are 9, 18, 27, and 36%, depending on how much the combined net receipts are for each organization. House File 293 would establish new rates of 6, 12, 18, and 24%, again, depending on how much the combined net receipts are for each organization. Madam Chair, I do have a technical amendment that, I can talk through it right now, but we can take it up when we have a quorum. And basically the amendment, as the tax rates are adjusted, the combined net receipt amounts also need to be adjusted for each bracket, and that's basically what the A19 amendment does. The ultimate policy goal of this bill is to get more money back to the charitable organizations that operate these games to raise proceeds for good work in our communities. Although we do not have a fiscal note on the bill yet, the rate cuts are structured to preserve the money that is needed to pay off U.S. Bank stadium bonds. And so at this time, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to testifiers or take questions.
Thank you, Representative Lean. And we do have a list of testifiers. Mr. Lund. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alan Lund, Executive Director, Allied Charities of Minnesota. We're a 501c6 that represents licensed gaming charities in Minnesota. Also, greetings from the Osseo Lions, of which I'm a member. We support this bill. This would reduce our taxes. Since 2017, as a total group, we have paid more to the state in taxes and fees than we have for our communities and our missions. In 2013, 9% of us, or 110 charities, paid more to the state than they have for their communities and missions. And in fiscal 2018, that number went up to 300. So we went from 9% to 34% of us are now paying more than we have for our communities and missions. Our local needs are growing. Local charities can respond to local needs faster and more economically. How charitable gambling works, just a very quick overview. If you come and give us a dollar, at the end of the day, we're going to give you 85 cents back. That's the prizes that we pay out. That leaves us with 15 cents. We pay the combined receipts tax, the 9, 18, 27, and 36 on those 15 cents. Of those 15 cents, 7.5 cents will go to our expenses. That's our wages, the rent we pay the bars, and the cost of our games. That leaves us with 7.5 cents. In fiscal 2018, we then sent 4 cents to the state, which left us with 3.5 cents. In 2013, we knew that at the end of the day, we would have 5 cents for every dollar wagered. That's now at 3.5 at the end of fiscal 18, which is a 30% decrease in those 6 years, intervening years. We pay sales tax, we pay the gambling tax on all of our dollars. We pay the gambling tax on our, on the sales taxes that we pay. These bills would help us to keep more money in our communities, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. Next person on the agenda is Amanda Jackson, followed by Rachel Jenner. And testifiers, appreciate people from the public coming to testify on this bill. I'm not seeing either of those. Oh, okay. We will give you a moment to get down here. If you can do as best as possible to not duplicate testimony, repeat testimony, that would really help us move things along. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Jackson. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amanda Jackson. I'm with the Spring Lake Park Lions. I'm a proud member and the gambling manager. And we run a charitable gambling operation. We, at this point, pay more in taxes than we give to the back to our community. We serve our community by helping the local food shelves, youth programs, and other organizations in need. So any help on this bill would be greatly appreciated by our charity. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate that. Rachel Jenner, followed by Tom Deegan. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
My name is Rachel Jenner, and I'm the CEO of Destination Education. We are a scholarship foundation in the North Metro area, and we award 6 college scholarships each year for a total of $25,000. In 2018, our revenues were $363,000, and we paid $116,000 in state and city taxes, which was equivalent to 32% of our revenue before expenses. After expenses, we had $28,000 in profit. The bottom line is that we now pay 4 times more in taxes than we have for our donations. We operate on a shoestring budget of part-time staff making minimum wage and a gambling manager making $15 an hour, also in a part-time position. My position is as a volunteer, as is the rest of our board. We have made cuts by closing our staff booths, laying off our employees, and trying to operate with machines and e-gaming with a minimum staff. Most of our costs, unfortunately, are fixed, our cost of games, our minimum wage, our rent, and our taxes. And we are now in that large percentage of charities who pay more in tax than we now have for our mission. In 2017 to 2018, our revenue increased 7%, which was $25,000. However, on that increase, we paid $14,000 in taxes, which equates to 56%. With these progressive tax rates, making more money has actually become a detriment to our bottom line. I've been in this business for 20 years, and this year, for the first time, we have a moratorium on our scholarships. Without tax relief, I'm not sure that we'll be able to continue operating in charitable gaming. It's unfathomable to me that a charity operating in the state of Minnesota pays such high tax rates as compared to profit businesses and other charities. As a whole, we're paying $95 million in tax this year as an industry, and for the past 7 years, that tax amount has increased at 5 to 10% per year. And so we would like to see some return on that annual increase. Organizations in charitable gaming provide valuable resources in our communities. We're funding our college scholarships, fire equipment, playgrounds, community programs, and supporting our veterans. If we can reduce these tax dollars, that's money that we can put directly into those programs. And if we fail, I don't know who will fill that gap. Thank you for considering tax relief for us and funding our programs.
Thank you for your testimony. Tom Deegan, followed by Glenn Jenkins. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Tom Deegan, President, Northeast Lions. I won't go over what's already been stated. Our group feels the same way. I just want to give some statistics. In 2017, our group sold $10,615,619 in poll tabs. In 2018, it was $12,382,312. So a net increase of, excuse me, $1,766,693. But our donatable money actually went down in that fiscal year, or this past 2018. And it's due to the taxes. The state got $97,000 of that. We got $1,941 less than we did the previous year. So we lost money on an increase of $1.7 million in sales, roughly. So our concern is, as this continues, us too, we are not being able to serve the community as we once did. So we ask for support in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your brevity. Glenn Jenkins. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Glenn Jenkins. I'm the gambling manager with St. Paul Firefighters. I'm nowhere near as polished as everybody else, so if I do something wrong, please stop me. I just found out about this yesterday, so I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I'm going off my memory. I would call charitable gaming a handcuffed business. You can't go in and raise the price of a dollar pull tab to $2.15. Nobody's going to pay more for a dollar than a dollar. And as taxes increase, other businesses are allowed to raise prices. We are not. It's been the same since it started. $1, $2, $5. Since the 80s, I believe it started when I was in high school. Everybody else has told you about taxes and the relief we need. What I think people don't understand is truly where the money goes. This is my third or fourth time testifying, and I had a gentleman, one of the representatives 2 years ago, tell me that pull tabs was here to shore the state up. And I didn't quite understand what he meant, and we talked after, and he told me it was because when it started, the state of Minnesota was in trouble, and they needed money. Once they got out of trouble, it was used for local, what the government couldn't pay for. I would be willing to bet there's not one person in this room that hasn't been affected by charitable gaming in one way or another. How many of your kids play hockey? That cost gets offset by charitable gaming. How many people are members of American Legions, veterans associations? How many people have been sick? Those are all things that charitable gaming is giving money to. I'm going to share one story. I am also a firefighter here in St. Paul. My fire station's roughly a half a mile from here. If one of you gets hurt, I'm the guy that's coming tomorrow. We had a young man, 5 years old, dying to be a firefighter. He was, excuse me, I'm sorry. He was diagnosed with a very rare form of cancer, and his only wish was to be a firefighter. He came to our fire station one day, and that kid could have had anything he wanted, ice cream, cake, whatever he wanted. You had nine firefighters that were fawning over this young man. His mom came up to me crying afterwards, and they had a benefit for him. They were going to have to destroy his immune system. He was going to be in an isolation room for 45 days where he could not be around. Can you imagine being 5 years old and not being able to be around your parents? His parents were trying to raise money to pay their bills, their mortgage, everything, so they could sit outside the room and at least their son could see them and keep him calm. They came up short. At that moment in time, I decided whether I had to stop paying all my employees. These people were going to be there for that boy. That's what charitable gaming is for. It is to help people. It is to give money back to the state of Minnesota. It has a direct impact on each one of your constituents. This is money that's unimpeded by political process. It's money that just goes straight back to the people, the state of Minnesota people. Thank you. appreciate your support.
Thank you for your testimony. And I just want to thank all the testifiers again for your brevity and assure you that even though your testimony is short, you have an impact when you show up to represent your community. We all notice. And I'd say everybody on this committee is very skilled at absorbing information quickly. So don't let your short testimony in any way make you think that you're not having an impact on your legislators, because you do. Representative Lean, any final comments on this particular bill?
No, Madam Chair, committee members. I just appreciate you hearing the bill, and I ask for your support on the amendment and the bill when we get to that point.
Thank you, Representative Lean. At this point, I'm going to lay your bill over, and we will pick it back up once our quorum is here. I'm getting minute-by-minute updates that we are very close. So with that, I am laying over House File 293. Next on the agenda is House File 356, another Representative Lean bill. When we have a quorum, I will make a motion to lay this bill over as well, so that the author can continue to work with stakeholders on the bill. Representative Lean, to your bill.
Thank you again, Madam Chair, committee members. I appreciate you hearing this bill as well, House File 356. And the need for this bill was brought to my attention by Joel Richardson of Gaming Studios. Mr. Richardson is a paddle wheel game designer. In 2012, electronic simulated paddle wheels were authorized in the Vikings Stadium bill. House File 356 continues that work by reducing the number of paper tickets players use for paddle wheel games without tables and making tickets electronic for paddle wheel games that use tables. The bill also provides the Gambling Control Board with the ability to further regulate paddle wheel games. It is not my intention to expand gaming with this bill. Paddle wheel games are already in operation as charitable gaming. The bill would simply streamline and modernize the administration and operation of paddle wheel games for the charities that utilize them. And I will now walk through the different sections of the bill. Section 1, Subdivision 18, establishes electronic paddle wheels to be run by a remote server and clarifies tables can be used with electronic or manual wagers. Section 2, Subdivision 28A, and Section 3, Subdivision 28B, allows one ticket to bear all the wagers a player selects per spin rather than one ticket for each spin, and this is good for up to 10 spins. It also allows electronic tickets when a non-electronic table is used to record all wagers. Section 4, Subdivision 29, allows symbols to be used on paddle wheels. It allows for three wings to spin simultaneously on the electronic paddle wheel as one spin. It controls electronic paddle wheels to spin no more than once every 3 minutes unless the electronic wheel is used with an electronic table. And it clarifies that no paddle wheel may be a player-activated or single-player terminal. Section 5, Subdivision 4A, authorizes the Gambling Control Board to have regulation jurisdiction over electronic paddle wheels. Section 6, Subdivision 2B, sets the prize limits for winning wagers, price limits for wagers, and wager limits for spin. The prize and wager limits are already set in administrative rules, and this bill would put these limits into law. Section 7, Subdivision 8, pertains to allowing the quantity of chips to be shown instead of the value when the value of electronic gaming chips used with the paddle wheel are recorded, and the same for all chips in a player's position. Note, none of these could be worth more than $2 each under existing law. And Madam Chair, I again appreciate your attention to this bill, the committee's attention, and I will now turn it over for questions or anybody who wants to testify on the bill.
There's a list of testifiers that have signed up. Al Lund. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back. If you can reintroduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alan Lund, Executive Director, Allied Charities of Minnesota. Allied Charities of Minnesota supports this bill. HF 356 would authorize an electronic table to complement the electronic tri-wheel authorized in the 2012 session. Charities see this as offering an electronic version of a manual product already in use. Electronic versions of our paper games have been in use since 2012. We currently have electronic bingo, electronic pull tabs, and electronic raffles. Electronic versions offer advantages over the manual version. The security of a game is enhanced in an electronic version. As an example, a random number generator used in electronics is considered more secure than a manual wheel. Our manual table today has no limit as to how many people can be playing while the wheel is in play. The table being proposed would only accommodate 6 patrons. While the manual versions of our products are doing quite well, our electronic versions are seeing volume increases each year, and we need to be prepared for the day when electronic versions will be the preferred method for playing the games that we offer. We would be offering our patrons the ability to choose between the manual and electronic versions, as we do today with bingo, pull tabs, and raffles. Our patrons would be the ones to tell us when a product that we offer is no longer needed. This is not an expansion of gaming in Minnesota. This is an evolution, not a revolution. The charities ask you to support this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. Amanda Jackson, followed by Annette Meeks. Welcome back. You can reintroduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. And proceed.
Once again, my name is Amanda Jackson. I'm with the Spring Lake Park Lions. I'm the gambling manager. The Spring Lake Park Lions last fiscal year were the number one charity in selling Minnesota Tri-Wheel. We sold a little over $1.2 million in sales, and we had a profit of a little over $98,000 to give back to our community. The Minnesota Tri-Wheel has been at one of our location sites since the mid-80s when charitable gambling started. We have a good following of customers, I believe, because it's a little bit more of a social game that customers like to come in and enjoy. The Minnesota Tri-Wheel is an expensive game for charities to run. They purchase these packets for placing bets that run between $13 and $15. We went through 2,523 of these paper pull tab or paper pads that you need in order to run the table. Also, we are required by Gambling Control Board to have cameras in place with a 90-day retention. We also are required by the Gambling Control Board to watch one shift per week of any games, any tables in play, which takes our organization about 12 hours per week to review. Currently, there are about 20 tables across Minnesota in play, and I believe that it is difficult for charities to get into the tri-wheel business because there just aren't that many old tables from 30 years ago for purchase. Also, the tables are becoming a little bit cumbersome to keep up and maintain because over the years they've had a lot of wear. An electronic table would eliminate the cost for charities for paper books. They wouldn't have a need for expensive camera equipment with a 90-day retention, and it would save on video. So that's all I have to say about that. Thank you for letting me speak again.
Thank you for your testimony.
You.
Annette Meeks. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Annette Meeks, and I'm a volunteer board member with Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. CAGE was founded over 20 years ago. It's comprised of political, civic, spiritual leaders in our community who believe Minnesota currently has a wide array of gambling. We are one of the most diverse organizations in the state, one in which conservatives and progressives work side by side with a common purpose, and that is to stop further expansion of gambling of any source. I'm here today to state our opposition to House File 356, a bill that would authorize an electronic form of paddle wheel. We believe that this bill, which would literally reinvent that wheel, and not for the good of our state and our local communities. This bill is a major expansion of gambling, one that could potentially open the door to allow video slot machines in bars and neighborhoods, including those in your neighborhoods. It's my understanding that one of the electronic paddle wheel games under consideration today is called Pig Wheel. I'm not making this up. This game would dramatically change the way current charitable bets are placed in Minnesota bars and restaurants. Rather than have a paddle wheel located in the charitable gambling site, this legislation would authorize the use of a video monitor that's hooked up to a central computer server that would utilize random number generation technology. This is the same technology, random number generation technology, that is used to operate video slot machines. In this case, it would be allowing video roulette games, which can be found in casinos in other states, but not currently in Minnesota. This would literally open the door to video slot machines in every bar and restaurant in our state, something we would strongly oppose. Our second objection is this proposal would raise the gambling prize limits per wager from $70 to $1,000. Larger bet limits equal more problem gamblers. It's that simple. And finally, this game is clearly designed to capture not only more money from problem gamblers who would have the opportunity to wager and lose more money very quickly, but that so-called table games like video roulette, which this is, are designed to entice younger gamblers. According to the Pigwheel blog, when there, and this is a quote, when there goes the only social table game in the charitable gaming portfolio, and it is the social attributes of table games that are attractive to the newer, younger players. You can call this whatever it is, but it is a major expansion of gambling. Minnesotans currently have ample opportunities to gamble, whether that be at Native American casinos, a racetrack, a state lottery, or their local bar or restaurant that sponsors charitable gambling. But please don't allow this major expansion of gambling to occur today. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we also have an organization that submitted testimony instead of testifying at the table today. I just wanted to draw your attention to the letter in your packet from the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. We do have a quorum, and so at this point in time, I'd like to call our meeting to order officially, and I would like to move in front of us officially House File 356, which is in front of the committee. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, we will, the chair, is there any discussion among the committee members? My apologies. Then the chair will lay over House File 356. Thank you, Representative Lean. I will now move in front of us House File 293 by Representative Lean as well, and that be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I do see that we have an A1 Authors Amendment, Representative Lean. I will move the A1 Authors Amendment to House File. Oh, I'm sorry. Who else is short on sleep? I will move the A19-00441. Author's Amendment to the House File 293. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Your motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Lean, a final word on your bill?
Madam Chair, committee members, I appreciate hearing the bill and allowing me some time in your meeting today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lean. All those in favor of, I will renew my motion that House File 293 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and you are on your way to taxes, Representative Lean. Drive safely, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. One more official piece of committee business. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to look at the amendments? And if so, would you move approval?
Amendments.
I have
minutes.
Madam Chair, I have reviewed the minutes and I'll move them.
Representative Howard moves the minutes of February 27th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails. Anybody in favor of more coffee this morning?
Aye. If the chair's buying.
All right. Representative Detmer, House File 294.
His birthday.
Is it your birthday, sir?
It's my wife's birthday.
It's too. Your wife's birthday. And your and wife's birthday, too?
And their kids.
And where's lunch today? This is an auspicious day, sir. Welcome to the committee. Happy birthday to you and to your wife. Thank her for allowing some of your time to be spent with us today.
Well, Madam Chair and members, when we found out last night we were going to be presenting here, she said, on our birthday, so we will be going out to a special place after after when I get home. DOT. When I get home.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I will move House File 294 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. I don't see any author's amendments, so you can proceed with your bill, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And what I'm going to do, I have three testifiers, and we'll just bring them down, and then for the next bill, just count that for the next bill, too, just to cut back on time. But House File 294 is a bill that provides sales tax exemptions for items purchased and leased in connection with the lawful gambling. Under current law, lawful gambling organizations pay sales tax on items and purchases and awarded as prizes to the lawful games, as well as on items used in conducting the lawful games. This bill would exempt these items from the sales tax. This bill is effective for sales and purchases made after June 30th, 2019. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to bring down my first testifier, Mark Kurth, from the Lexington Fire. And something special about Mark Kurth, I haven't seen him since he graduated from high school. He was an ex-student of mine, but welcome, Mr. Kurth.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Kurth. I am a 11-year firefighter, a gambling manager for the Lexington Fire Relief Association, and I'm also the mayor of the city of Lexington. Our organization is the second longest running organization in the state of Minnesota. We have paid millions of dollars in taxes, and for the first time, we now pay more taxes than we make. The city of Lexington relies on charitable gambling to support our fire department. All of our equipment, all of our vehicles have been purchased through charitable gambling. If we continue at this tax rate, we will no longer be able to support our fire department, and therefore we'll have to raise taxes on the citizens to pay for this equipment. As we all know, property taxes are already too high as it is, and if we continue to stranglehold them, we will simply out-tax them. So you had mentioned earlier, Madam Chair, that us testifying today makes a difference, and I truly hope that that's the fact. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Your next testifier, Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And we have Susan Normandin, if you would come down, from Hopkins.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Susie Normandin. I'm the gambling manager for the Hopkins Raspberry Festival. I'm also a volunteer board of director. Hopkins Raspberry Festival is celebrating their 85th anniversary this year. Many of our years have been supported by charitable gambling for what we do. We support our firefighters, our injured firefighters, empty bowls, children's education programs, firefighting education programs for children through our charitable gambling. As a gambling manager, we are all on call 24/7, nights, weekends, and even family holidays and vacations. We put our heart and soul into what we do for our organizations as well as the community. We are held to very high standards, regulations, and reporting requirements by many government and local agencies, and believe that it's time we get some relief for all of our hard work. With the existing combined tax receipt law, organizations pay taxes on gross receipts minus the prizes paid out. There's a bill before you that we believe should be passed in compliance of the same wording. We also ask that you look seriously at our current tax rates. Many of us organizations currently are at the 36% tax rate. Then take into consideration the 10% that goes to rent for the establishments and the 30% that we have to pay to the community for our mission in order to stay within Gambling Control Board compliances. This level leaves us with roughly 24% in which to pay our wages, our supplies, and the cost of games. Let us not forget the additional 31% that we pay on the gambling tax for ETABs, the state and local taxes, and the extra 15% that we pay on the games for rent. It's no wonder that many of us are upside down. Our organization just completed its Minnesota mandated revenue financial audit report by a CPA, which, by the way, cost us $6,500. Mm. It clearly shows how upside down just we are. In 2018, we were only able to donate $28,442 back to our community and to our organization. But yet, we paid $103,543 to the state for taxes. In Minnesota, and then we left very little left in the bank. I ask you, what other business in the state of Minnesota can pay over two-thirds of taxes with no allowable deductions and less than one-third to themselves to pay operating expenses? These rates and mandated requirements are becoming more and more difficult to maintain. This is why we ask you that you please do not disregard our request for help and pay the tax, pass the tax bills before you. It is becoming extremely difficult, and we would like to continue with our 85-year tradition to make it another 85 years. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Your next testifier, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the testimony that you're hearing is for both bills that I'm carrying. I think they would also for all the other bills we've heard also. So next testifier is Mr. Jim Probst from South Robert Street Business Association.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Jim Probst with the South Robert Street Business Association. I'm a board member. In 2017, we were able to give out $200,000 of money that we raised to our community. Unfortunately, we were had to pay in taxes and fees to the state of Minnesota over $400,000. The money that we had given away goes to everything from Boy Scouts to sponsoring our social events in West St. Paul, West St. Paul Days, South Robert Street Fun Fest, and our Touch a Truck event for kids. But the most important dollars that we give away is to the Henry Sibley Dollars for Scholars program. We're the number one sponsor of that program. We gave away $20,000 in scholarships to kids at Henry Sibley. It went to 40 kids, and anything that we can do to help young people, I'm all for. College these days is just unbelievably expensive. If we could find a way of balancing that $400,000 to the state and $200,000 to our community, I'm all for. The amount of money that we could do with an extra $20,000. $30,000 would really go a long ways to help support our community. And if we could find a little bit more money for our Dollars for Scholars program, I would really like to do that. So I appreciate your consideration, and we'd like to hopefully move this thing along. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, my name is Gerald Smith. I am a adjutant for a local VFW and a local American Legion. I'm also a gambling manager for Mendota VFW 6690. If we didn't have charitable gambling, we would not be able to keep our organization open and helping veterans and other entities. With the charitable gambling, we donate to a lot of things that the state, you know, doesn't help out. We give quite a bit of money just under $10,000 last year to both the Hastings and Minneapolis Vets Home. The Hastings Vets Home, we actually pay for all the TV and internet service that the men that reside there are able to, you know, to have, be able to view TVs actually with cable. We give to a lot of other programs, and I'd like to probably enter this in testimony. It's actually the donations that we made, such things as Sibley High School Band. We sponsor kids from low-income families to be able to play in the band, other organizations like that. We actually donated in the last 6 months of last year $46,148 to many veterans programs. I know the state, we have 180 veterans that are homeless, and MACV, Minnesota Assistance Council of Veterans, has a program going right now where they're trying to get the rest of those vets off the street. We've donated $10,000 to that program. So if you'd like, I think that's my testimony, and you know, if you'd like a copy of this showing the donations that we've made, we need tax relief. There's no doubt about that. You know, I'm paying 36% on everything, and I'm just a small veterans organization, a small vets post. We're paying, you know, roughly close to 36% on taxes, and it would be nice if we had more funds available to donate to the programs you're not able to donate to, that you don't have the funds to. We're helping out, we're helping the state out a lot, but what we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And if you'd like, we can have a page grab your testimony, and we'll have that distributed to the members. Anybody else from the audience wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, any discussion from the members? Seeing none, final word, Representative Bittmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Again, House File 294 would provide tax exemption on prizes, lawful gambling equipment, and collection and disposition, depositing and disposition of the prizes. And again, I'll say some more comments for my next bill, and I won't have any, except for maybe Mr. Lund will come up for the next bill. But thank you for hearing this bill, and hopefully we can go forward with it.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 294 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails, and your bill is on the way to taxes. Next bill is House File 69, Representative Detmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 69 has probably been around the longest of any of our charitable gambling pieces of legislation that we've been trying to get through. And members, the bill allows a charitable organization to subtract certain lawful purpose expenditures before calculating its tax liability. And examples of this would be the purpose of expenditures that would be deducted from the calculation of the taxes are charitable contributions, expenditures for youth, recreational, and athletic activities, and expenditures for acquisition and repair of improved equipment, real property assets by the charitable gambling organization, and expenditures for natural resource projects, activities, expenditures on organizations that recognize military services. I think all the testimony that you heard today on these different bills, they all have the same theme. We want to keep more money into our local communities. All the 34 years that I coached and taught at Forest Lake High School, and I'm also a member of the VFW, American Legion, the Lions Clubs, we've always tried to put more money back in the community. And whenever I needed new uniforms for the wrestling team, by the way, the state wrestling tournament is going on today, and I bet if you would ask all those teams that are down here for the state wrestling tournament, where they get some of their funds to be able to put their teams up in the hotels and so forth in uniforms, I would guarantee you it would be from some of these different organizations in their communities that provide funding through charitable gambling. So let's keep the money in our local communities as much as we can. Maybe to wrap things up, that Mr. Lund would come down and maybe wrap things up for this, for my bill. But I think House File 69 has probably been around the longest of a lot of these bills, and it would cover a lot of these things that the different testimonies that we heard today was bringing forward to the committee. Thank you.
Mr. Lund, welcome back to the committee. You can restate your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alan Lund, Executive Director, Allied Charities of Minnesota. We support this bill. Most people would not believe you when you tell them that we pay taxes on our donations. We can find no one that does not derive some benefit from making donations in Minnesota. What this would do, I had a handout here that I hope you have, that this is our return from my Osseo Lions from January. We're at one site, and our organization lost money on charitable gaming in January. Now, we don't do that every month, but when we're paying the 36%, it is nip and tuck for us every month that we do that, and we do that for about 8 months in the year. So what this would mean, if we were not paying taxes on our donations, it would mean about $15,000 more for my Lions group. So we would ask for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. Is there anybody else from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, member discussion, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, for those who have not, maybe have come for the liquor part of our discussion today, this is an important issue when we talk about charitable gaming. As many of us are preparing our personal tax returns this year, just imagine that you got your W-2 and all of your 1099s from your investments, and then there were no lines for deductions, and they said, now go to the tax table and multiply your income times this rate. That's what these folks are up against. And when you take a look at the work that they do, it's volunteer or near volunteer work for the different organizations in the state of Minnesota. And I do know the dilemma that if we provide some relief to the organizations, that takes money off of the state receipts. However, as you've been hearing, losing money, got to watch one month over the other, trying to manage it. You're going to find yourselves in a situation where there's going to be fewer and fewer and fewer, and then eventually no organizations are going to want to do this, which means that the state will lose a partner in different ways to help out with needs in our local communities, and the state will lose whatever revenue they have. I'm hoping that, Representative Davis, who is on here on the committee, not here today, but he's on the tax committee, and that Chair Marquardt from the tax committee can find a way to be able to work with the governor's office and the Senate in the upcoming tax bill to provide some form of relief, because this will eventually go away in the state of Minnesota. And some people might be just happy to have all that gaming go away, and I'm not here to say pro or con to that. I'm just telling you that the receipts are going to dry up to the state of Minnesota, and we're going to lose that quiet but diligent partner in our local communities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Detmer, for bringing this forward. This is a big deal in my communities, and by my communities, I mean also where I grew up. Watkins is only 800 people, but a lot of the fundraising and such that goes on in that community is for things like the fire department and the rescue squad and such, and so these dollars are extremely important to those communities, as we heard in testimony. Usually when I go home on Thursday nights, I go straight to Shooters for the meat raffle. I didn't make it last night, but my husband was kind enough to send me a picture of a box of bacon that he had just won. So yeah. His comment was, I'm still bringing home the bacon. But what's most important is we just switched from Golden Glove Boxing to one of the baseball teams in our community. And folks go there because of that, because of the donation to Golden Gloves or to the baseball teams or the hockey teams or whatever's going on. It is amazing to see the crowd shift when you go from one organization to the other, because they know that money goes to them. So, you know, I'm not a big gambler, but when my husband and I do go out and we see something around, we'll look to see who it goes to and then participate. It is a big deal for a lot of our communities, and I just am really, it's really sad to see how much money doesn't go back to the community, so I appreciate these bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Seeing no further discussion, final word, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and these organizations, as been talked about today, these are service organizations, and we want people in our community to serve their community. And anything we can do as a legislature and along with the governor to keep that money in our communities is a big plus for what we do here at the Capitol. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. With that, I renew my motion that House File 69 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails. You're on your way. Happy birthday. Next on the list, Representative Becker Finn, House File 1119. Welcome to the committee. And for those folks who came in after our starting, I just want to remind folks that we have a big agenda and a snowstorm, so we are going to limit public testimony to a couple minutes per person, and we'll be timing. So welcome, and you may proceed.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So House File 1119, if you've read the House research summary, it's two sentences long. It's pretty straightforward. It would allow our municipal golf course, or one of the remaining municipal golf courses in Roseville. And I do have one testifier, our city manager from the city of Roseville, Pat Trudgeon.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to appear in front of you to talk about this bill to allow the city of Roseville to grant an on-sale intoxicating liquor license to the Cedar Home Golf Course. This is a way, as a quick background, we replaced our 60-year-old clubhouse in 2017. As part of that, there was a lot of community outreach and conversation about that, and we wanted to transform it more than just a clubhouse into a year-round facility that can be used by people in our community throughout the year. As part of that, also we wanted to expand our offerings beyond just the 3-2 liquor license that we can currently give to craft beer and wine. We designed our facility in those ways and planned for that. We also changed our local ordinances to allow us to grant ourselves a liquor license at the Cedar Home Golf Course. As we worked with the state in designing it to make sure we met all the state requirements, we were disappointed to hear 2 days before we were opening that we were not allowed to have an on-sale liquor license. And unfortunately, we had to open without that. So that is why we're here today, to simply ask for permission to do that, to grant ourselves our own liquor license. This is very similar to what the legislature has granted in the past to cities like Duluth, Becker, New Prague, Golden Valley, and go down the list of things. So that's quite simply just a request for us to have permission to grant ourselves a liquor license. We appreciate any support you could give on that, and we appreciate the time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, any member discussion? Seeing none, last word, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to be clear, they already can serve alcohol. It would just allow the city to do that directly. So it's pretty straightforward and would help out one of our cities. So thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, the chair lays over House File 1119 for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill. Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 347, Representative Becker Finn.
So House File 347 is commonly referred to as the Bent Brew Distillery Bill. I have with me today the owner of Bent Brew Distillery, Bartley Bloom. So it's a brew distillery. It's the only, to my knowledge, the only business in our state that both crafts their own beer and craft spirits in the same space. And I will let Mr. Bloom testify as to the rest of this piece of legislation.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Halverson and committee members and Representative Becker Finn. My name is Bartley Bloom, and I'm the owner of Bent Distillery in Roseville. As mentioned, we are the state's only microbrewery-micro-distillery combination, and we have 8 full-time employees. As a small Minnesota brewery and a small Minnesota distillery, we would like the same treatment as every other small Minnesota brewery and every other small Minnesota distillery. As of the end of the 2014 session, we started getting treated differently. This was when the cocktail room license was created in the state statutes. Coincidentally, this is when we were neck deep in the renovation of our leased space. This newly created cocktail room license would have been great news, except for the fact that it singled me out as ineligible. The last provision of that statute says that no entity or location will hold both licenses. Why should we be treated differently when we do the same work, undergo the same financial hardships as all other microbreweries and all other micro distilleries? I'm not so much trying to change the law for myself as I am trying to fix a discriminatory law that was passed 5 years ago. Our opposition may postulate that the law was written to protect small Minnesota businesses against big national brands. Well, we are a small Minnesota business, and we suffer at the hands of this statute. Besides, Minnesota state law already protects against big national brands from owning a combination cocktail room tap room. Only a micro distillery, as defined by the state statutes, is allowed to have a cocktail room license. Also, if the big national brands wanted to do this, they already would have done it in the states that don't restrict this type of combination. They wouldn't lie in wait for Minnesota to allow this before pouncing on what they believed as an opportunity. That point is moot. Fear of the unknown is not a valid argument. Our opposition may also argue that this is further degradation of the three-tiered system. I beg to differ. All micro distilleries are able to apply for a cocktail room license, with the one exception that we've already pointed out. This vehicle already exists. We are just not allowed on the bus. I honestly believe in the value of the three-tiered system. Not everyone wants to manage a fleet of trucks and drivers. No manufacturer can be in all places at all times. The other two tiers of this system have their definite place in this industry, but that place should not be to dictate what's done and not done in the state of Minnesota. The craft industry is a quickly evolving industry, and this evolution is driven by the market, the consumer, not by any tier of the three-tiered system. We all need to evolve, or we go the way of the dinosaur. Kodak tried to repress the development of the digital camera, and that didn't work out so well for them. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, and that's the way it's always been. Why should we change it now? Are not valid arguments anymore. The market, the consumer, your constituents are the ones who want to see evolution. Please, Chair Halverson, committee members, help us allow this industry to evolve and pass our bill to allow a tap room and cocktail room to coexist. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. We'll continue to take public testimony at this time. Pat Trudgeon?
He's back.
Welcome back. And I please restate your name and
you.
For the record, and so that I don't mispronounce it next time.
You had it correct. My name is Pat Trudgeon. I'm the city manager for City of Roseville. Just want to come in front of the committee here. Actually, Mayor Dan Rowe was hoping to be here, but he's unable to be here. Wanted to express his support as well as the whole city council support for this bill. Ben Brasillery is a great local business that provides jobs and adds character to our community. In the city of Roseville, we do not allow on-sale intoxicating liquor license unless there is at least 50% of the receipts from that business as part of, for food. And as part of that, we make sure that that is followed very carefully. When the state of Minnesota authorized tap rooms, we did consider that, but said that tap rooms are different than the typical bar and have treated that differently. Since that time, we had not had any issues or concerns, including public safety concerns, with the operation of the tap room, and we would see no change if you allowed for an on-sale cocktail room license as well in the same place. So we want to go on support on record for supporting this bill. The City Council did pass a resolution in 2018 supporting this change in law, and we ask for your support as you move forward in the legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Pat Lutgen. I'm sorry, Phil Lutgen. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Phil Luchin. I'm an owner-operator of two restaurants, currently not in the city, where Ben Brasillery is located. What I'm here to tell you and what to share with you is cutting-edge craft technology, mixology, breweries are what's going to continue to drive this industry forward. And it's what's going to continue to drive creativity amongst the hospitality service industry. As an operator of three restaurants, I support Ben Brasillery operating a tasting room in their distillery process. I believe it will continue to move the industry forward, and I want the chair and the committee to understand that as a small business owner in the state of Minnesota, I support this. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Elizabeth Emerson, followed by Tony Chisek. Or you can come down together. Welcome. I think that's a great idea. Efficiency.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. You, the two of you can determine who goes first and introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Tony Chisek. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. When the taproom bill was passed in 2011, Barnes expressed concern this would allow production breweries to sell their beer at retail lower prices than bars because bars have to pay shipping and wholesaler costs. The agreement was that the production breweries would only sell their beer. And thus, even though a competitive advantage existed in this relation to their own beer, because they were only selling their beer, it was not a full bar. And thus, despite the competitive disadvantage, because tap rooms wouldn't be full bars, we agreed to the tap room bill. Since the passage of that bill, there has been a tremendous growth from 5 breweries to over 160 in Minnesota. In 2014, distilleries sought a cocktail room to mirror the tap room. At that time, a large brewer in Minnesota indicated that he might be interested in putting a cocktail room in as well. He noted that it was pretty easy to bring in distilled spirits from other states, run it through an oak barrel, and sell whiskey and cokes along with beer. Based upon that concern that this would change the very nature of what had been contemplated, discussed, and agreed upon when the taproom bill was passed, I do not understand how changing current and agreed upon law for one retailer makes sense. We still have this concern and thus oppose the bill. Moreover, the licensing fees in Roseville and many other cities provides a significant break to brewers and distillers for their own tap rooms and cocktail rooms over and above what are charged to bars. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chesek. Ms. Emerson, welcome.
Thank you. Chair Halverson and members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Emerson. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations at Goff Public, and I'm here today on behalf of Breakthrough Beverage. While, yes, I am a hired lobbyist, I am here on behalf of the 352 employees of Breakthrough Beverage right now who are distributing wine and spirits around this state and distributing beer in the 9-county metro area. Breakthrough Beverage does support current state law that allow small producers to have certain advantages under the law. We believe it's important for both brewers and distillers to have these avenues to allow them to build their brand, and of course one day with the goal of us being able to help them produce and sell their brands around this state. Our employees right now are hard at work building those brands and supporting that. We're concerned about this legislation because we feel that both distillers and brewers have advantages that folks, that other retailers on our market do not have currently. We are concerned as the market skews that and some retailers are given advantages. This slowly morphs into giving advantages to certain type of retailers and not others. So we support a level playing field for all of the retailers that we work with directly to make sure that they are delivering consumer choice and quality products. And to the extent that this is an erosion of that, we express our concerns of it. I will say we are excited about the craft market and thank Representative Becker Finn for bringing this forward. As innovations like this come forward, we certainly want to be partners in figuring out responsible ways that we can move forward to support these industries. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Emerson. Mr. Reynoso, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We represent in excess of 62,000 active and retired members in the state of Minnesota. I come here to testify in opposition to House File 347. You know, Teamsters manufacture many of the liquor, much of the liquor. We transport it from these distilleries and manufacturers. We warehouse it. We deliver it to retailers. And in some cases, in municipal liquor stores, we sell it. We feel that this is just a part of the attack on the three-tier system, and we're concerned of the total impact that this would have concerning our members. We have about 1,100 members in the liquor industry itself. And, you know, and we keep on hearing from whether it's a distillery or whether it's a craft brewer that the laws need to be changed to accommodate their business. What about the liquor stores that have been living with the laws, the restaurants that have been operating under the current laws? What this would do is create winners and losers. These businesses knew what the model was for their business when they started their businesses. Now they want to change the model to benefit themselves to hurt others. It's just fundamentally wrong. Plain and simple, passing this bill would further erode the three-tier system. It would cost good union jobs that provide great wages and benefits for our members. For that and many other reasons, Madam Chair, we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Reynolds. So, Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson. I represent the Minnesota Wine and Spirit Wholesaler Association. I will be extremely brief. We do oppose this bill, however well-intended it is, and we appreciate the intention behind it. Now, I only want to add one thing that hasn't been said. When Pat McCormick gave his presentation of the three-tier system, one of the things that he spoke about for the reason of prohibition and the reason for the three-tier system was the Tide House. That's why we have the three-tier system, and we think that this really violates the purpose of the three-tier system. You manufacture, you wholesale, or you retail, and this tries to do all three, and that's where we think it just goes too far. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, member discussion. Seeing none, last word, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do want to acknowledge we have about 15 or 20 people here in support. We knew that the time was limited, so we explained to folks we didn't necessarily need every single person to come up here and speak in favor of the bill, but we do have people from many different legislative districts here, and I want to recognize that I think we're the biggest group of people who aren't being paid to be here are these folks in support of Ben Bruce Stillery. So it's 2019. Bent Brew Distillery is a unique, innovative small business that we in Roseville want to support. The sky will not fall if we were to pass this bill. Right now, so if we pass this bill today, the only thing that would happen tomorrow, if it was signed into law, is that this one business would be allowed to serve craft cocktails in their business. It wouldn't turn Bent Brew Distillery into a bar. They would still only be selling Bent beer and Bent made spirits made on site. And they really are a valued part of our community. If you've been to Roseville, you've maybe noticed that we have, and not to disparage those businesses, but we have just about every chain restaurant that you could imagine and big box store that you could imagine. And Bent Brew Distillery, though, is really a place in our community that's a very valued gathering place in our community. It's one of the few businesses where if you walk in there, you're probably going to talk to one of the owners, and it's probably going to be Colin serving you a beer. And it really is, they do all kinds of charitable gambling, charitable work. They host a lot of events for our firefighters, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, all kinds of events like that. So, again, it's the sky will not fall if we pass this bill. Bent Brew Distillery will still be Bent Brew Distillery. It would just allow the distillery side of the business to keep up with the other micro distilleries in our state. So I thank you for your time and consideration. And if members of the committee ever want to talk offline too, I'm happy to discuss. Perfectly willing to be reasonable to make sure that we're doing what we can. And then just finally, the bill does include to the license fee issue and the unfairness, supposed unfairness to other bars. It does state that the cocktail room license fee would be equivalent to the municipality's on-sale liquor license fee for other businesses. So that piece of it would remain across the board equal for everybody. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. With that, House File 347 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Liquor Omnibus Bill. Next on the agenda, members and those following along at home, we are going to go out of order a little bit so that we can continue to allow members who are not on the committee to be heard and out. So, Representative Anderson, you may come forward to present your bill. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 543 be re-referred. We're just going to lay it over. Still short of coffee. Thank you. Welcome, and you may proceed.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just home. It's snowing back home, so thanks for getting me on the agenda. And we're back again so soon this morning. Seemed like we just left. Anyway, this situation was brought to my attention a year ago by a mom-and-pop liquor store back in Melrose, Minnesota. And what makes their situation a bit unique was, like a lot of liquor stores, they sold ice to their customers, but they sold ice that they made on site. It wasn't prepackaged ice like a lot of other liquor stores do. And things were going along just fine. The Department of Ag would come out and inspect them. and to test their water and charge a very nominal fee for their food handler's license. But a couple of years ago, the definition of food was changed, expanded to include beer, wine, liquor. And because of that, now when they get their license to sell their ice, their license fee is based on their gross revenue sales of all of their liquor. And their license fee, well, I don't know the exact numbers, we had this a year ago, but from under $100 up to like $1,000 for their license to sell a nominal amount of ice. So what this does would grant that same exemption for prepackaged ice to those liquor stores that would be inspected and sell ice that they make on premises, Madam Chair. And we do have an amendment and to have a testifier to explain that. And if you would move that, I would appreciate it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And I will move Representative Anderson's DE1 author's amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Your amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the shape you would like. Would you like to introduce your testifier, sir?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Brant Irwin. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association. We're a trade association of family-owned distributors that employ thousands of Minnesotans throughout the state. I'm here today to convey MBWA's support of the proposed amendment that was just moved for House File 453. Specifically, the proposed amendment exempts alcoholic beverage wholesalers from the requirement to obtain a food handler's license, since those wholesalers similarly only deal with prepackaged goods. This would bring beer distributors into alignment with soft drink and liquor retailers, each of whom already have an express exemption from the obligation to obtain that food handler's license. These exempted retailers purchase and receive prepackaged products from distributors, and similarly, distributors purchase and receive prepackaged products from manufacturers and suppliers. And distributors don't modify, alter, rectify, or change the liquid that they receive in these prepackaged products. So accordingly, there's no reason or basis to regulate or inspect distributors any differently from retailers from a product safety perspective. As was referenced, for decades, the Department of Agriculture didn't consider beer to be food and didn't require distributors to obtain a food handler's license. So the proposed amendment actually reverts back to the department's prior longstanding interpretation that beer distributors who distribute prepackaged goods shouldn't be required to obtain this this food handler's license. In addition, beer distributors are already regulated on multiple fronts. On a federal level, it's the TTB, the Federal Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. On a state level, it's the Minnesota Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, the AGED. And in addition, the warehouses are inspected by AGED and the Department of Ag. So MBWA supports this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, last word, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a research staff said that the particular liquor store we're talking about, their licensee went from $77 up to $799 a year, so substantial increase because of the definition, wider definition of what food is. So thank you much.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Any discussion among members? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 453 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, sir. Have a safe drive. Next up, Representative Juergens. Welcome to the committee, Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for hearing our bill.
Absolutely. I am going to move the House File 1462. Be laid over for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, members, you may have remembered in 2017 we changed the law in Minnesota to allow for Sunday liquor sales. And with that, the first year happened to fall on leap year, or rather I should say because of leap year, the Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve fell on a Sunday. And so what this bill does is it just makes some slight adjustments to accommodate that. It also keeps the 7 hours of sales, but it backs the start time up to 10 o'clock in the morning and the close time on Sundays to 5. Still 7 hours, still have the same number of hours, but we think that this change in hours will generate more sales for liquor store owners, which also generates more tax dollars for the state of Minnesota. With me today to testify is a liquor store owner in my district, Steve Dennis, owner of Dennis Brothers Liquors, and he will testify on this bill, and we'll take any questions when we are done.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Steve Dennis. I am the owner of Dennis Brothers Liquor in Cottage Grove. I also believe in good faith that I am the only elected official in the state of Minnesota that owns a liquor store. We've been doing our thing for the past 16 years. We are one of the four grandfather craft beer stores. We were doing this at a time before craft was really popular. So as you can imagine, both with experience and being a hands-on owner-operator, I have done everything I can through due diligence and experience to become an expert in my industry. So what we have before you today is a very simple request that we believe, again, in good faith, will make a difference in terms of sales and opportunity for us as investors. We're looking to simply change the hours on Sundays from 11 to 6, move them back 1 hour, 10 o'clock opening until 5 p.m. What that will do is that will put us into more of what I would consider to be a sweet spot for sales opportunity. If you recall a few years back when the whole Sunday sales liquor thing was going on and people were talking about, well, one of the reasons we want to have that is we want to support tailgating. Football is very popular here in the state of Minnesota. And unless you have the ability to employ Star Trek technology and beam somebody over to a store, you can't open at 11, buy a product, and then get downtown, set up, cook food, drink a beer, and get into the game. So we want to be able to support those fans and do something that's advantageous for our business. Additionally, here in Minnesota, through the northern latitude that we have about a third of the year where we get dark or are dark, you know, by 6 o'clock. So what we have found is in that final hour of sales that, you know, people that are, you know, enjoying a beverage on a Sunday, they tend to drink a little bit less on Sundays. If you're cooking a meal, you're not going to go out to your package store and pick something up. So the final hour of operations has really proved to be negligible in terms of earning power. So what we're doing is we're asking for fine-tuning so that we can move into more of a sweet spot that will provide an advantageous opportunity for the consumer, for us as investors, and we believe will generate more tax value to the state for important projects that you guys have to work on. And then as Representative Juergens mentioned, once every 7 years, and it doesn't come along very often, but we would like to be able to tweak the starting times and closing times a little bit so, again, we can provide more full-service opportunity to our clients. I'll speak very specifically on New Year's Eve. Historically, for my 16 years, I found that about 70% of my sparkling wine or champagne sales occurred between 5 and 9:30 p.m., and when I close at 6 o'clock, guess what? Folks aren't able to come in and buy. And they're doing what they've done in the past, which is to go over to Wisconsin, which we don't want to see happen. So this is what we have before you, and in good faith, again, I feel it's nonpartisan, it's non-controversial, it's designed to provide a benefit all the way across all three playing fields of consumer, investor, and state of Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. I worked at a small liquor store when I was in college as well, and so I was nodding in understanding of what New Year's Eve is like when you're working in a liquor store. So, and as owner-operator, I'm guessing days off are few and far between.
Yes, ma'am. Things have changed quite a bit for us with the advantage. I mean, years ago, I knew I signed on for 6 days a week. I'm a workaholic. I have no problem doing that, but now we're at 7.
Yeah.
And so this has actually enacted, you know, some challenges for us. And I know you guys have probably paid pretty good attention to Minnesota Revenue when they released the actual findings of what Sunday sales have accounted for. And I think we were looking somewhere around 1.6-1.7% increase. But that actually, interestingly enough, was down from about 3.5 points the year before we actually achieved Sunday sales. So this has been a challenge, actually probably more advantageous for me as a small business because I'm able to cover those hours myself. It's a personal loss, you know, to me, but I don't have to pay salaries for people to be there. If you're a larger entity and you're paying folks and maybe have to have a manager on staff, that has really created a hardship for businesses. And as you probably know, when you're up against fixed costs, labor, energy, additional insurance, all these things factor to the bottom line. So what I'm finding and what I'm hearing from other friends who own businesses in our industry is this has really been a challenge for us. So I'm not here to cast any aspersions on that. We have the playing field that we have. But I think it's very important that, you know, we do what we can here to try to maximize and make this be a little bit better at this point in time than what we have. So that's really what the attempt is about.
Very good. Well, thank you for the additional perspective and a little update on how our new system is working. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. You're the first liquor store owner that I've seen at a testimony table since we changed Sunday liquor sales. And I'm just curious, what has been the impact on your business beyond, you know, sucking up your time on Sundays?
Thank you, Representative. We have not seen, and I'm really sad to say this because I am an investor, and I mean, we got into the business to make an opportunity financially for myself and my family. We have not seen any, I mean zero, appreciable sales coming off of this result. What has happened is, as we had anticipated, the sales became spread out. We have lost a sizable amount on Saturdays. It used to be we did maybe 15-18% more sales on Saturdays and Fridays. Now what has happened is the equivalency has balanced out, and we've also seen a slight decrease in Monday sales as well. So what is happening is the percentage of business, which all together when you round it out, is somewhere between 13 to 15% when you look at those numbers. That's what we have made up in the middle on Sundays. So we're virtually, you know, flat as far as sales would go. You know, when we had the first couple, and again, Representative Juergens came to my store on that very first day and made a purchase, and we got a little photo op together.
First sale.
Yep, very first sale. And, you know, we were hoping, based on how those numbers turned out, that it was going to be fantastic, but that has not been the reality. And, I mean, there are times when you sit there, and it could be an hour between customers mm-hmm. coming in. So it's a slow day. What we see people buying is smaller purchases. A six-pack of Miller Lite, or a bottle of wine for $8.99, or a pint of vodka. These are not the type of purchases, the multi-items in a cart, you know, substantial units per transaction, that really make a difference. And the average unit sale is really, really small compared to the rest of the week. So that's kind of what we've seen out of it.
Thank you for the clarification. Follow-up, Representative Dean? No.
I'm sure that's, you know, when we think about the debate that took place, that was one of the things, that sales were just going to be stretched from 6 days to 7 days. And, of course, there were a lot of people that said, well, no, there'll actually be more sales. So it's I don't know if it's comforting, but gaining knowledge is always good. And to know that we may have made it more convenient for some Minnesotans to purchase on Sunday, we actually haven't done too much to help liquor stores. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? No. Further member discussion, Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean brings up a good point, and the testifier as well. And I realize that committee time is limited, but something for the future. It might be nice, although this isn't the Finance Committee, the policy decisions we make have an impact on finance. It'd be nice to see maybe a regional breakdown from the Department of Revenue, because we were told that it might not help the inner parts of the state of Minnesota, the inner corridor, but it's going to prevent those businesses that may have been losing revenue to Wisconsin and others on Sunday because they were open and Minnesota wasn't, to see if that is a statewide trend or if there's a regional difference or significance on that. I think that'd be really good for the committee to be able to learn. Obviously, we've got a lot of things, but I just put that out there as something maybe for our 2020 when we get a couple years of baseline on that, but something to think about.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for the suggestion, and we will put a pin in that and revisit
Madam,
that. Thank
Madam
you.
Chair,
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I might point out to Representative O'Driscoll's point, Mr. Dennis's business is about eight miles from Prescott, Wisconsin. So if anybody was going to see an increase on Sunday, you'd think it would be Dennis Brothers' liquor store. And just in, if there are no other questions, should I
Representative Juergens, yes,
okay,
please.
Thank you. So also, Mr. Dennis would have one, I guess he's got one comment.
Go ahead, Mr. Dennis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One additional thing, you know, as we look at structuring this, this is a small thing that can help with a little bit of stabilization for our industry on our side of the three-tier. We have come under, substantial impact from changes in the laws here in Minnesota. The original Surly bill that went through. We did have bent-proof steel right here a short bit ago, looking to change the law too. And so what has happened, just to be very transparent and provide some detail for you, about 24% of the craft beer sales market has been pulled out of traditional chains of sales through retail stores. And where this is going now is, mm-hmm. It's going on-premise to these tap rooms and these local producers. And I know Surly themselves, they average about $1.8 million a month. And that's a big part of it. But anything that we can do to help stabilize what's happening on our side of the fence here so that we don't have, an extinction event that takes place for the independent, retailers. One of the things that really made our state fantastic is that we did have some built-in protections over the years that allowed not only for a very, very strong base of retail, but also independent wholesalers, too. And this is one of the reasons why we're the 16th largest market in the country, and we had a top five beer selection. I want you to think about that. Top five in the country. That's amazing. Wow. And it's because we had all the diversity of choice and option out there. So as we're being impacted by the changes in the laws, what's happening just last Friday, J.J. Taylor, which is a very large Miller distributor and beer distributor here locally, laid off 13 people. Brooklyn Brewery laid off the state manager and his assistant about a week and a half ago. And this is all direct cause and effect to that 24% that's being taken out. So if you look at any business structure, anything, if you have a double-digit decrease, that's catastrophic. So one of the things that we are facing here coming up that may be the worst thing of all is the fact that 3-2 beer production is going to be going away. And I don't know if you're aware of that, but what's happening is we are one of two states left in the country, us in Utah, that are the last ones for 3-2 beer. So if you look at the number of on-premise licenses that we currently have, or off-premise licenses we have, it's about 1,100. You're going to almost triple that number with 3-2 beer license stores or accounts that will want to sell strong beer. That's going to crash the system. The wholesalers don't have infrastructure or means of getting those customers taken care of. And what's going to happen if that is allowed to take place, you're going to have strong beer and other things being sold everywhere. And the problem that we face is with all these other companies, whether they be big box, whether it be convenience stores, gas stations, grocers, they sell multiple product lines. We only sell one thing. So therein lies where we really sit on the precipitous edge. So this is really important, and I ask that you keep this in mind as we approach that time. The anticipation for this is somewhere within the next 3 years.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Dennis, and for providing some background on the business of small liquor stores. I just wanted to make note that we did go a little bit beyond the scope of this particular bill, but we did ask you some questions about how you run your business, so appreciate you answering those questions. Any further discussion from members? Final word, Representative Juergens, and we will move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dennis alluded to this earlier, but just also for the record, he's a Cottage Grove City Council member. And so I appreciate the fact that he brought this to my attention and for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. With that, I renew my motion that House File 1462 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. Next, Representative Loeffler. Welcome to the committee. I assume that's empty.
It is.
Representative Loeffler, please proceed. Sorry. I'm going to move House File 1802 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Liquor Omnibus Bill. Welcome, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thanks for hearing this. I call House File 1802 this bill the Taproom Sell Growlers Bill. And I think most of you probably know what a growler looks like, but it's a small container that you can get filled at your local taproom where it is brewed on site. and take it home or to a small social gathering. It's not very large. It doesn't last very long. Just in terms of freshness, it's not like something you buy that's bottled or canned. And I think if you ask most people to define a tap room, they'd say it's a place where they actually brew on site. You can see usually the big kettles and other accompaniments that are part of the brewing process on premises, and you can sample that by buying a drink right on site that was brewed fresh, and you can take it home if you purchase a crawler. I think I have a variety of these in my district, and they're starting to be everywhere across the state, but not as much yet in the rural communities. And I think of the small breweries with a tap room as the kitchens of the business. It's the test kitchens. Brewers are like chefs. They don't want to make the same thing every single day. They're always looking for a new flavor profile, a new mix. And usually when you go into the tap room, while they'll have some old standards, they will also have a variety of new things that they're experimenting with and different styles of beer that you can only get at that particular tap room, at that place. You can't get it commercial. You can't get it off the shelf. You can't get it at a restaurant. And trying these is a major attraction to the public. You know, the public likes to also try new flavors and new combinations. That's why when you go to a restaurant, the chef's special is oftentimes the thing that many people look to more than other offerings. And in many communities, these tap rooms are destination attractions for tourists and locals. And they help, the growlers help when you grab them, like I do, and take them to a gathering. You introduce new people to the product, to the taste, and that makes them seek them out when they go to bars, restaurants, and the local liquor store. And right now, by law, all craft brewers can't sell more than 750 barrels of product in their tap room in any way, through a growler, through a pour into a pint glass. That limit will stay if this bill is passed. So the 750 barrel limit of at the taproom remains. But currently, if a craft brewer sells more than 20,000 barrels in total, both at the taproom and commercially through canning, bottling, kegs provided to restaurants and other ways, they have to stop selling growlers at their taproom. And there's just a few that have hit that limit, but a few more are approaching it. And this bill would allow all brewers with a taproom, an associated brewery, to sell crawlers on site, even if they've had commercial success in the three-tier distribution system and exceeded the 20,000 barrels of total sales. Some have hit, you know, one or two products that are really successful, but they still want to be experimenting and doing some other ones. For the tap room brewery is the test kitchen where new products are experimented with. And the sale of those growlers helps the owner determine if there's enough public interest to take the risk to put that product into production in canning or bottling and into the competition for space in local bars, on the shelves in the liquor stores, or in the restaurants on their menus. And so they really appreciate the role that being able to sell the fresh product on site gives them in terms of really judging, is there a potential market for it? Is this worth the business risk? So these tap rooms and their growlers lead to successful new products that enter the three-tier system. Those that have, you know, and so I hope that we'll always be open to new ways to develop successful products that are successful not just in the neighborhood where they're located, but create jobs and opportunities by serving other parts of the state and other states. And with that, I have a couple of testifiers who can answer your questions and give more background on the industry.
Representative Loeffler, if you could have your testifiers come down.
Great, please. And the first witness is Lauren Bennett McGinty from the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild, which is the Association of Craft Brewers.
And Ms. McGinty, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes. Thank you, committee members. My name is Lauren Bennett McGinty, and I am the executive director of the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. The Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild advocates for, promotes, and engages with the Minnesota brewing community. We have more than 130 members, 40 industry member partners, and an enthusiastic fandom, as many of you probably know. I'm here on behalf of those individuals and small businesses to help create more market access for breweries, which increases opportunities for wholesalers and retailers and provides what the consumers demand. To support these initiatives, we have introduced this bill, among others, to expand the existing growler cap and allow breweries with a taproom to sell growlers. Currently, Minnesota law requires a brewery to stop serving growlers from their taproom if the brewery produces more than 20,000 barrels annually, as we just heard. This cap might seem high, but we only have 5 breweries in the state that have exceeded that production. Why, then, are we asking to remove the cap entirely? Though we only currently have those 5 breweries beyond 20,000 barrels, we have several breweries who have grown faster than they expected. This cap presents breweries with the needless choice to either expand or continue to see steady income at their brewery. Castle Danger's story, which you will hear, is an excellent example of how unpredicted growth can leave a brewery to make difficult decisions. Once a brewery reaches 20,000 barrels, they also experience other financial pain points, which means no more self-distribution. While this isn't a negative for a brewery, it represents a major change in their business. Margin and revenue change overnight, and a brewery is under the gun to keep growing if they want to achieve the revenue and profit they were making when they were self-distributing. Of course, we already discussed the loss of growlers, which is usually a 6-figure number for any brewery. And in a brewery, margins are razor thin, so losing 6 figures worth of money is not insignificant. And then the federal excise tax changes, and it's applied to all beer produced beyond that 20,000 or 25,000 barrel mark, so they're almost at that point at 20,000. My question is, should small businesses have to choose between growth and purposefully stopping production to ensure employees can come to work the next day? Growlers keep consumers coming back to breweries, and they keep people employed. We recognize that there may be concern for the alcohol entering the marketplace should the cap be removed, but the truth is that even if all 5 breweries who currently aren't selling growlers begin to sell again, we're only looking at 3,750 additional barrels of beer in the marketplace, which is 0.1% of all of the beer brewed in Minnesota. The current off-sale allowance is set at that 750 barrels per year, and that limit would remain in place. I want to just emphasize that that means any off-sale product from a brewery, which is in a bottle, a growler, is set to be only 750 barrels annually off-sale. So we're not asking to change that at all. It will not significantly impact off-sale for all the breweries. I urge you all to consider this change. As Minnesota continues to produce breweries, we have become a beer tourism destination, and we should embrace the small entrepreneurial businesses.
I just want to let you know you're at 3 minutes, over 3 okay. minutes, and so we're trying to keep a testimony under 3 sure. minutes. Thank you. If you could wrap up.
Okay. Rather than penalizing successful small businesses, we should encourage their success and welcome more of it.
Thank you. You were wrapping up anyway. Lon Larson. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
My name is Lon Larson, and I am co-owner of Castle Danger Brewery. Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and committee for hearing our story. Castle Danger is a small craft brewery on the North Shore of Lake Superior. We have a family-friendly tap room. Like all breweries in the state, we started in a garage or a kitchen in 2011. In 14, we brought to the downtown of Two Harbors investment and revitalization and building a brand new brewery from the ground up. And in 17, we expanded and doubled capacity. Today, we are the fifth largest brewery in the state in terms of a single brand being brewed. And for us, tourism and the impact of tourism and the growler impact on that is critical to our success and growth. I think in the past with the taproom bill, we've heard the stories about the destination, going to the taproom and the experience of the taproom and the growlers being synonymous with that. We are with a high tourist demo in Two Harbors. We are that classic story. Ordering food, local musician playing, taking that traffic that is going up Highway 61 and stopping in a town of 3,600 people, grabbing supplies, gas, etc. The whole town is a benefactor of the success of Castle Danger Brewery in town. Last year, we had over 100,000 visitors stop at our brewery in a town of 3,600 people. 91.2% of our visitors are not local. That is a high tourist demographic. Tourists want to buy knickknacks. Tourists want to take something home. And the growler is something that they can take home with them. Growlers create exposure, they build brands, and in turn greatly benefit our wholesalers and our retail partners. I want to be crystal clear. I am 100% in support of the three-tier system. I personally deliver products out of my pickup truck to over 150 accounts, and that was enough. There's a reason for the three-tier system, and we are a benefactor of that. We wouldn't have the statewide distribution reach without it. Our opponents to this bill and legislation will say it's an attack on the three-tier system. I could not disagree more. The three-tier system is back up. I'm a CPA by trade, so I like my numbers. I'm going to give you a couple, and I'm going to ask you to write one down.
And you're getting fairly close to your end time.
I'm almost there.
Thank you.
The hard cap for what you can go out the door should not and is not changing. This bill simply says if you have a tap room, you can sell growlers, which is synonymous with the experience and what the consumer wants. Approximately 3.7 million barrels of beer moves through the state of Minnesota annually. Here's the number to write down. We are talking about less than 0.1% of that beer. 0.1% of that beer is what this bill would allow to flow. And for us, that's critical. What's the impact
on
us?
Can you wrap up your testimony?
I will right now. Thank you.
We're well over.
30% of our sales in the tap room are growlers, tourism, artifacts. We will lay off 3 to 4 people that have good-paying jobs that we are adding benefits, 401k, health insurance for. And to me, I don't feel like we should be penalized for our success.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Next on the testimony list, Brant Irwin. Just remind testifiers that we're going to try to keep your testimony under 3 minutes.
3 minutes, an extra minute. I will do my best. Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you again. My name is Brant Irwin. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association. I'm here to provide opposition testimony on behalf of MBWA for House File 1802. This bill would provide a limited number of manufacturers a substantial competitive advantage not available to the thousands, actually over 8,000, family-owned distributors and retailers scattered across Minnesota who have invested in the current regulatory system and operated responsibly in this state for decades. Let's talk about numbers. Under current law, Minnesota brewers already enjoy regulatory exemptions which provide them with substantial advantages. Specifically, a brewery manufacturing 20,000 barrels of beer per year and the equivalency of 20,000 barrels is over 250,000 cases. So I believe it's 277,000 cases of beer. That's a lot of beer. Is permitted to sell 750 barrels of beer per year. 750 barrels is over 10,300 cases. Again, it's a lot of beer. To consumers for off-premises consumption, sales of those 750 barrels are limited to 64-ounce growlers or 750 milliliter bottles. I want to clarify something that was said earlier. There is no limit to the amount of beer that a taproom can sell for on-sale consumption. That 750 barrels is only off-sale limits. The proposed legislation would eviscerate those regulations by completely eliminating the current production limit of over 250,000 cases. Our current regulatory system was designed to create a level playing field between industry members and prevent the vertical integration of this socially sensitive industry. Specifically, under the three-tiered system, each tier is restricted to its service function. In other words, brewers brew and sell to distributors. Distributors distribute and sell to retailers. Retailers then have the right to sell to consumers. And through the system of checks and balances, global manufacturing conglomerates can't monopolize the industry by acquiring distributors and retail outlets. This system has provided substantial benefits to the citizens of both Minnesota and the country in general, and it effectively balances competition with control. Tipping the competitive playing field in favor of a few manufacturers is not justified by assisting what was once viewed as a small business, since the extreme increase in capacity limits will open the door to all breweries selling at retail. A production brewery that can produce more than a quarter of a million cases of beer per year is not a small brewery that requires a competitive advantage. In order to benefit a handful of brewers, this legislation would substantially aggravate the competitive disadvantage that other industry members suffer under current law. Since 1987, so over the course of the last 32 years, brewers have sought and received multiple legislative advantages. I have a list of them, which I won't go into, but if you want them, I'd be happy to provide them. I would respectfully suggest that it is not the role of the legislature to pick winners and losers in an industry by tipping the competitive landscape in favor of some to the disadvantage of others. So on behalf of Minnesota's over 8,000 distributors and retailers, as well as Minnesota consumers, we ask that you oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for your brevity. Came in under time.
Excellent.
Mr. Reynoso, you can have a seat. I also have, prior to you, I have Jennifer Schoenzeit. Okay. Have a seat. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. My name is Jennifer Schoenzeit. I own Zips Liquor in Minneapolis, and I'm also the past president of the Minnesota Liquor and Beverage Association. I'm going to skip my first part because you've already heard it. So, the current laws are not impending growth. As we've all seen, they're growing and growing. In 2013, there were approximately 30 of breweries, and now there's over 160. The exceptions for the production breweries is a retail advantage, selling growlers, taproom, self-distributing, already creating an imbalance in the three-tiered system. It is intended to help small business thrive. It is an unfair advantage in furthering disrupting the smart balanced set of alcohols that have already been set. As you know, I keep coming back year after year. My father started our store 61 years ago. And I love beer tourism. I have one of the large breweries near me, and they send me a ton of people to buy their products. It is lovely. If they started selling growlers and crowlers, I would lose a lot of business. So, yes, beer tourism is lovely for our state, and the Branco breweries are great. But the laws work, and every time they come back, I feel like they're picking winners and losers, and I am a small business, and I look mean and bad. So it's getting hard. So I just wanted to thank you for your time, and if you have any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Reynoso, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Edward Reynoso with the Teamsters. I want to clarify a couple things. This is not a small beer. This is 64 ounces. What they're saying is that, with all due respect, Representative Loeffler, what this bill is saying is that 10,000 of these, it's not good enough. They need more. 277,000 cases of beer a year produced is a small business. I beg to differ. As a previous testifier said, this bill would accommodate two businesses. In opposition would be 8,000 retailers that currently operate under the same rules. You know, we keep on hearing this small business here today. You got to support small businesses. When these growlers started, when they asked for these growlers, it was about creating a craft brewer that can give somebody a souvenir to take home. Now it is being said that it's the only way these businesses are going to survive if they can sell an unlimited amount of these growlers. That's just, it's disingenuous. Secondly, nobody is prevented from buying these products at a liquor store. They can continue to produce beer once they hit the limit. And when I hear an owner of a company say that we're going to have to lay off a ton of people if we can't sell growlers, they don't only sell growlers at these businesses. They sell cases of beer and beer at the bar. So, you know, I just think this is probably the most egregious of all the bills that attacks the three-tier system. And I ask that you really consider the impact on the drivers, on the warehouse workers, on the manufacturers of all these other businesses and the liquor stores that this would drastically impact. So with that, I ask that you consider opposing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, is there any discussion from members? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was actually going to hold my comments to the end, but I think that now is a good time to interject them. For those of you who weren't around 5 years ago, I was actually the legislator that carried the what was known as the Growler Bill. Craft breweries has said that the expansion of their business was being impinged by a 5,000-barrel limit, and that the only way that they can continue to grow their businesses was to have that increase. And remember, we set up the tap rooms as a way to allow opportunities not only for craft brewers to have people sample and be able to drink their product. It was also set up because that can be a fairly profitable part of a craft brewer's business. Now, would it be as large of a profit center if they were, you know, brewing 100,000 barrels? Probably not. But at the 5,000-barrel level, that was a pretty significant part of that. And we moved that. We increased that by four times, five with some variations, to get up to 25,000 barrels. And, I mean, I've got to tell you, I was a little bit shocked that just 2 years after we passed that bill, they were coming and asking to be able to lift that cap to 25,000 or 250,000 barrels from 5,000 to from 5 to 20 to 250. And if I look at this bill, there's like no cap at all. And if I, you know, I don't, if I'm a large beer brewer, does this then allow me to come in to the Minnesota and say, you know, I'm going to brew some beer here, and we're going to have a tap room? And so now all of a sudden all these craft brewers that we try to assist them to establish their businesses and to grow their businesses are now going to be in competition with other major large brewers. And beyond that, you know, there's often talk about moving the goalpost. And we had, you know, our folks at Charitable Gambling come in here earlier, and Representative Driscoll talked about the importance of that money staying in their community. But at the same time, as a business person, when you set up a business, there's a set of guidelines and a set of rules and a set of laws that you agree to follow when you set up your business. And, you know, not every business that's established in the state of Minnesota succeeds. I can pretty much say that that's a fact. And I think that we need to be really, really cautious when we do things to help an industry that does have an effect on other industries to continue to move that goalpost for them. Now, I'm probably going to get in trouble for my testimony. I have lots of craft breweries in my district. But I felt I was doing something really, really good by allowing them to go from 5,000 barrels to 20,000 barrels. And many of them have prospered. They prospered very well. We have as was testified earlier, we have an incredible craft brewery industry in the state of Minnesota, and I think we should keep that. And I would actually say that I think this goes beyond keeping it, and it totally transforms what this industry is. So, Madam Chair, I would just say that as we look at all these things, you know, how many times can we move a goalpost to accommodate individuals whose businesses are growing, and that's great. I think it's an opportunity, but, you know, in the end, those 750 barrels that are sold through a tap room, if you're selling, you know, 100,000 other barrels, I would assume that impact on your business might not be as great as you think. And I understand that Representative Loeffler talked about the notion of experimenting and trying new things and getting a sense from patrons on what works and what doesn't work. And I would say for those businesses that want to continue with that business model, that I think that the standards that we have in place are really good standards, and I probably went way on too long. Thank you for not cutting me off, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Any other questions from members? Seeing none. Representative Loeffler, extremely brief last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for committee for the consideration. I do want to point out, it's been said by a couple, there's no cap at all, and there is a cap of 750 barrels to be sold off sale. And many of these products are not available at retail. The only place you can get that is at the tap room. And I think that's a distinction that needs to be considered as well, because these really are destination places and the test market for this business. Thank you for your consideration, and glad to discuss other options going forward.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1802 is laid over. Thank you.
Thank you.
For possible inclusion. Next, Representative Nash.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Madam Chair, if you'd do me the favor of moving the bill.
I will move your bill. I move that House File 1827 be laid over for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill.
I used to be able to do that, but I'm sad to no longer be on Commerce. Madam Chair and members, this bill is a coordinated effort between the distillers around the state. In the last 5 years since I've been here, you've heard me talk about distilling quite a bit. I think I've hit most of the distilleries, and always in moderation. But, I think one of the things that I hear the most from these distillers and that I pick up when I meet with them is they're small mom-and-pop folks who have decided, sometimes wondering why, to open up a distillery because that's a passion of theirs, and some of them find themselves having done everything but mortgage the dog to make sure that the thing is still running. And like my testifier here, they've made this a family affair. Both Joel and his wife are heavily invested from a time perspective in their business, and this bill is a reflection of that request. There are some changes that I think a lot of us agreed have been needed to be made for a long time, so in the interest of time, you haven't given me the mom look yet, but I will be brief, and I will let my testifier take over, and then I believe we have one other person testifying, and then we will move on.
Thank you, Representative Nash, and welcome to the committee. We are asking folks to keep their testimony under 3 minutes, so if you may proceed.
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much. My name is Joel Vikra. My wife and I own Vikra Distillery in Duluth, Minnesota. And I'm the legislative chair of the Minnesota Distillers Guild. I have two things I want to show you today. One is this impact survey we conducted of our members. And then the second is a brief summary of our bill in a national context. That's what you have in front of you. So as of today, the 17 members of the Minnesota Distillers Guild employ 232 people in the state of Minnesota. In 2018, we used over 2.3 million pounds of Minnesota grain, over 100,000 pounds of Minnesota apples, and a lot of other farm products besides. Three of our members are farm distilleries, and another three partnered with one farm off-site. And our relationships with the agricultural sector are cyclical, so our spent grains go back to feed livestock, often on the same farms that grow our grain. We have a big impact on the agricultural sector, but on the economy overall. We partner with local cooperages. Minnesota now has a very a booming local barrel business, as well as packaging suppliers, printing companies, food and restaurant supply equipment manufacturers, trucking companies, other beverage manufacturers, and professional services. We also have a big impact on the tourist economy. Of the 12 cocktail rooms that our members currently operate, 7 of them are in tourist areas. Our own is right next to the Liffbridge and Canal Park. So we're part of drawing tourists in for experiences and being involved in that tourist economy. In addition to all those ways that we impact the state economy, we also generate value for local retail and distribution. The vast majority of our products are sold through distribution, and the vast majority of them are sold in Minnesota. That said, we're still really small. So in 2018, our members together produced about 100,000 gallons of alcohol. Half of that was put into barrels to age, and less than 5% was sold in the form of 375 ml bottle sales from distilleries directly. So our industry is doing well. It's adding value in many ways to the economy, but there are growing pains. The primary thing is that our products sit on the shelf next to craft and commodity products from across the nation and the world, and we have to compete in that environment. And the Minnesota regulatory environment is really in the bottom third of states nationwide, and it is also becoming harder and harder to get distribution as a small distiller as the industry grows. We support a local alcohol economy across the board. We believe that retailers and distributors are our partners, and our goal is to build brands that then they can sell for good margins. We don't think it's a zero-sum game. And
we're
even
at
if,
3 minutes right now, so if you could wrap up your testimony, thank you.
Yes. I do want to say that we stand with retailers and distributors in opposing bills that would lead to consolidation of retail and distribution. We believe in a strong Minnesota alcohol industry across the board. I'm the only testifier.
You're not.
6 minutes.
No.
Oh, wait, no.
No, there are more people that are in the list.
It's just a trial balloon there.
Thank you.
The next page is the bill, and we've laid it out in national context, which is something that hasn't been shown to this committee before. So the four segments of our bill, I think it's interesting. I can do it in under 3 minutes.
Mr. Vecri, we have other people on the list to testify, so we asked each testifier to keep to 3 minutes. So thank you. Ms. Fisher Merritt.
He's not here. He's a farmer that we partner with in Carlton, Minnesota.
Okay. Ms. Emerson.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Elizabeth Emerson. Again, I'm the Vice President of Government Relations at Goff Public, and I'm here today representing the over 300 employees from Breakthrough Beverage Minnesota, located at Prior Avenue and University here in the city of St. Paul since 1956. While we certainly agree with many of the statements, and I really appreciate the testifier's commitment to both relationships with retailers and wholesalers, we do have some grave concerns about the sweeping changes here, and I think Representative Dean articulated many of our concerns that it's not just about one change, and certainly there was testimony earlier that does this little change, is this really going to rock the world? No, maybe not. But we really have to have some careful consideration of how these cumulative changes are going to affect the industry. You heard from the operator from Cottage Grove, the retailer, that all of these changes have pretty significant effects. Will they have these effects tomorrow? Maybe not. In 5 and 10 years, there are serious economic pressures, both at the retail, wholesale, and producer level that need to be considered. And we think a lot of the drastic changes occurring in this legislation are worth further consideration. We certainly are open to talking about ways we want to get these products to market. We want to be part of this exciting industry. We certainly think there are a number of reasons and challenges that Minnesota craft products are facing challenges getting to market, and we'd love to explore ways to address those challenges. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Emerson. Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, members, Joel Carlson on behalf of the Minnesota Wine and Spirits Wholesale Association. And as I had mentioned earlier, our association is firmly committed to the support of the three-tier system, and it is a system that has allowed family-owned businesses like the ones I represent to grow and thrive, and a number of others that have appeared before you today. I want to remind you that we have always had, since the repeal of Prohibition, we've always had tighter controls on spirits than beer, not just because beer expires on the shelf longer, quicker, but because spirits have a higher
alcohol concentration, which leads to things like binge drinking and all kinds of other societal problems. So when they talk about having parity with beer, that one just doesn't work for us. We've never treated beer and spirits the same. And I might have to argue with my good friend Ed Reynoso, because I think this bill is probably the biggest assault on the three-tier system. It doesn't That's tweak right. the three-tier system. It drives one of Ed's trucks right through it. First of all, you change the level of a micro distillery from 40,000 proof gallons to 100,000 proof gallons, yet they don't give up any of their current protections that they have from the three-tier system, their tax credit, their ability to self-distribute, or their cocktail rooms. And that's on page one. You change the samples that they can sell at their location from 375 to 2 cases of product per person per day. And as Representative Dean mentioned, it was just a couple years ago when we allowed them to sell samples. We didn't support that bill, but it was just a couple years ago. Now we're back for 2 cases per person per day. You allow a micro distiller to own their own wholesaler on page 3. So now they can be all 3 parts of the three-tier system. They can manufacture it, they can wholesale it, and they can retail it. And on page 5, you allow every micro distiller or farm winery to sell off-site, bypassing the wholesaler for wine tastings and other tasting events, which is currently not allowed. That product has to go through a wholesaler. The bottom line is this, Madam Chair and members. Micro distillers or distillers want to utilize the wholesale distribution system when it is economically advantageous for them to do so. But if it's cheaper for them or it's more profitable for them to ignore the rest of the three-tier system, they don't want to utilize our services. And that is not how the system is set up, and that's why we have such a strong reaction to this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Reynoso. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Reynoso. You can state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel like I should get a frequent flyer card today.
Today's the day.
Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We are adamantly opposed to this bill, and I want to put it in, and I'm going to be very brief. I want to put it in perspective. There are 25 distillers in the state of Minnesota. This would allow 23 of them to self-distribute, which would virtually destroy the distribution business in the state of Minnesota. Representative Dean talked about moving that goalpost. Joel has actually also indicated, I kind of mentioned it a little bit. The reality is this industry comes to the Capitol, to the legislature, every single year to move the goalpost. And they always say, this is all we need. This is all we need for this business to continue to thrive. But every year they come back for more and more. The reality is this is they're looking to hit a home run with this proposed legislation, and the reality is this would destroy the distribution industry for spirits in the state of Minnesota, which would be hundreds of Teamster jobs. These are good union jobs. These are jobs that pay great wages, benefits, pension, and provide for many families in the state of Minnesota, which many are your constituents. So we ask that you oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Mr. Bagnoli, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli with the McGranchet Carnival Law Firm. I represent the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association and the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. Very briefly, because much has been said, I just want to acknowledge today that this is the first time that a trade association of small producers has, on the record, said that they would oppose consolidation, and we appreciate that and thank them for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Is there anybody else from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one, we can turn to member questions. Any questions, members? Seeing none. Representative Nash gets the last word, and we're trying to be brief because we're trying to beat a snowstorm and our hard deadline of shutting down
Madam
the
Capitol. Madam Chair, in your packets is the information that was referenced. I would strongly encourage that you look at the last couple of pages that Mr. Vickrey mentioned. It is very illustrative, and I think that you would you would benefit from that. But I would say, remember that these are indeed small mom and pop businesses, and I would hate to disagree with Mr. Begg or with Mr. Reynoso, but I'm going to anyway. I don't see how a number of small distillers is going to destroy the distribution business here in the state of Minnesota. I believe that is well beyond their grasp. But I will say that these are people who you bump into at the grocery store and go to church with and play soccer with your kids together. This is an important and emerging industry, and I believe that their requests are not that unreasonable. And, Madam Chair, I do appreciate your willingness to work with me on this bill as we move forward with it in the Liquor Omnibus Bill. And I stand with you as we walk over to the Senate to talk to them because, as we all know, the Senate usually is the enemy. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. And with that, House File 1827 is laid over. Representative O'Driscoll is going to help us out by presenting some members' bills who couldn't be here today. Up first, we're going to hear House File 1815, and I move House File 1815 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Liquor Omnibus Bill. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. What House File 1815 addresses is locally owned, well, I should say municipally owned liquor stores. Very quickly, a quick municipal lesson. The cities raise taxes to fund general obligation things such as snow removal, firefighting, upkeep and maintenance of the city. They also may choose to establish what are called enterprise funds. Many communities do their sewer and water through an enterprise fund. And some may further go ahead and create a municipal liquor store. What enterprise fund is sort of a government-owned but run like a private business where they will generate a product, there will be revenue, there will be expenses against that, and then there will be a net profit that they would use to fund municipal operations as a result of that operation. The federal government and the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, or otherwise known as GADSB, has created a statement rule 68 that says that local units of government must carry on their books and records pension liabilities. And if you recall, last year in the state of Minnesota, we did a large pension reform bill, and I might know a thing or two about that particular bill, but I'll defer that conversation to another day. So how does this bill and pensions affect? In the state of Minnesota, if a local unit of government withholds as the state requires and the employees match, the money comes to the state of Minnesota and the state will true up and make sure that benefits are taken care of. We do not assess back to local municipalities. However, that is not the case in every state and in every jurisdiction when you talk about a nationally applied rule. What this does is this actually shows municipal liquor stores that may have had a profit showing them having a loss when they have to add these back into their financial statements. So it's an accounting function. But why is that important? Because the law requires if we have municipal liquor stores that have shown a loss in a series of years, there needs to be a hearing about whether or not that operation should continue, when in fact it may be profitable, but because of the GADSB rule requiring it to carry those, they may show that they have a negative. So what this bill does, very simply, is says that in that calculation for the public hearing and future consideration, we would not have require municipalities to include the GADSB 65 regulation. And with that, Madam Chair, I did talk with one of the testifiers that is on here, the League of Minnesota Cities. They said that they support this and are available for questions should the committee need that. And I have not had a chance to speak to the municipal liquor group, but I suspect they are also going to be testifying if they choose to in favor and be available for committee as well. Madam Chair, that concludes the testimony.
And Madam Chair, I'm that guy. Hey. The handoff is there, and I pass.
thank you. We will say that we have the Municipal Beverage Association available for questions if needed. Any questions from members? Anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? With that, House File 1815 is laid over. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And next we have House File 1031. I will move that House File 1031 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Liquor Omnibus Bill. Representative O'Driscoll, to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this bill is being presented today on behalf of Representative Hertas, and the committee was unable to be here today. And Representative Hertas has brought forward part of the state statute that deals with temporary licenses for nonprofit organizations. There is a stipulation in law that you are partially exempt from some of the requirements for having a liquor license. A local municipality can issue the license if the community has 5,000 or less people, but they can't issue more than one license to any one organization within that 30-day period of time. That rule is going to stay in place. The request in this bill is to move the threshold from 5,000 population in the community to 10,000 as those communities have grown. Who might be the people that would be looking at this? Your local house of worship may be under this, your local Lions Club, your local JCs, the list goes on, Rotary, Knights of Columbus, when they do different fundraising activities, and may also include with that event liquor. That concludes my testimony, Madam Chair, and I do not know of any testifiers.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, any member discussion? Seeing none, this House File 1031 is laid over. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, sure, do I have the record today?
You have the record today. We are all grateful to you, sir. Next on the agenda, I believe that we have Representative Dean. Would you like to present House File 1826?
Yes, Madam Chair. House File 1826. Revolves.
We need you on the record, sir. Sorry. Representative, appreciate your attempts at brevity.
Trying to talk and walk at the same time. It's a bill that would authorize and issue an on-sale license to a retailer located in on France Avenue South called Restoration Hardware. And I had this handed to me recently, so I'm not the expert, but the person to my left is the expert, and he will walk us through what it does.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Mr. Appitz, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Appitz with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and I want to thank you for this opportunity and for Representative Dean stepping forward. It seems kind of early for a member to have to be at two places at once, but that is the case with Mr. Elkins. He's in Blaine right now with the Transportation Committee, so a special thanks to Representative Dean and to yourself for hearing this. And this committee has heard this bill previously. This was a bill that was brought to you last year. It was a bill that was included in the Omnibus Liquor Bill last year. Unfortunately, it didn't survive conference committee, so with your indulgence, perhaps we'll have another shot at that occasion. I think everybody who's on the business committee here, the Commerce Committee, understands that retail business, and most people would generally agree, has a serious challenge today from the Internet, from Google, from Amazon, from eBay. And while they've created a lot of great opportunities for shopping, most of it's done right in your house. And so retail has got to come up with some other form of encouraging people to get out of their living rooms and come through their doorways if they're going to be able to survive. And that's what this bill is attempting to do. That's what Restoration Hardware is attempting to do with the particular provision in front of you. Got some materials in your packet. I think some people are taking a peek at them. If you have a chance to look, this will give you an idea of what Restoration Hardware is proposing over in Edina. They're currently located in the Galleria. Some of you have been there, obviously. And they're going to be leaving that location, moving across the street to a larger facility, the one that you see here. It's about a 60,000-square-foot facility, which consists of three different levels. And on the top level is a restaurant. It's going to be a high-end restaurant. And the restaurant is designed to encourage people, obviously, to come into the store. It's part of a new concept that they have that others are using as well. It blurs the lines between retail and residential, blurs the lines, if you will, between home and hospitality. And it's actually designed to become a sort of a destination place, if you will, for shopping and socializing at the same time. The provision that's before you would allow the City Council of Edina to grant a liquor license not only for the restaurant area, which it can now, but also to allow patrons to take a glass of wine or beer and roam the store while they happen to be there, the other two floors. Imagine coming out early for a nice dinner with your friends, ordering a glass of wine, and then spending time looking at ideas for your home. That's the idea we got here. It's the object here is to create a different kind of retail experience. The point is the restaurant will operate during the same hours as the store. It will have, it will not have a separate entrance. It will not have a separate, it will not operate as a separate bar or nightclub. It'll operate while the store is there. And it'll only sell wine and beer. It's designed to get people into the store and take advantage of that. While it's somewhat a novel, it's already working in a lot of other cities. Restoration Hardware has stores in Chicago, Nashville, West Palm Beach, Toronto, New York City, and Napa, and in the Napa Valley. They're going to open stores in Edina, Charlotte, and San Francisco coming up. The city council and the city manager of Edina support this bill. I don't know of any opposition from any of the interests that are here before us today. So if you give us a chance, we'd like to take another ride on the liquor bill this year. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, any member discussion? Seeing none with that, any final word, Representative Dean?
Madam Chair, thank you for your consideration and for your time this morning.
Thank you for being a stunt presenter. With that, House File 1826 is laid over. Is this our last bill? Okay, Representative Carlson, would you like to represent, present the House File 1909? Welcome to the committee. I move that House File 1409 be laid over for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Andrew Carlson, introducing House File 1909. This is the chief author of this was Representative John Lesh. He's not able to be here today. Under current law, up to 2 cases of wine per year may be shipped by an in or out of state winery to a resident of Minnesota. The bill would allow a winery to ship up to this bill would allow a winery to ship up to 12 cases per year, but would require all out of state direct ship wineries to obtain a license if they ship into the state. In addition, the bill would require direct ship wineries to pay all liquor related taxes. Currently, the wine excise tax does not apply to direct shipped wine. This exception is eliminated in the bill. The bill would also require a direct ship winery to collect and remit sales taxes on all sales into the state and pay the local gross receipts tax as well. Goes on, the bill would also impose reporting requirements on direct ship wineries and common carriers to aid in enforcing the proposed regulations. And lastly, the bill includes a section clarifying that under Minnesota law, no person may ship alcoholic beverages into the state for personal use unless the alcoholic beverages are shipped by a person who has obtained the required license. That is the overview of the bill. With me today, I have my fellow Carlson. I think there's a lot of Carlsons here today. So
what a surprise.
I know,
in Minnesota.
Maybe we'll get some more testifiers, Carlson's testifying as well.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Wine and Spirits Wholesale Association. And I apologize to you. I'm getting tired of hearing my own self speak. I'm going to have to partake in some of my clients' products as soon as this week is over. What I can tell you about the bill, and we're happy to answer any questions, is that you have a bill in front of you that is supported by everyone in the industry. We have worked on this bill for almost 2 years. There should be a letter in your packet on behalf of the Wine Institute. But this is a growing activity. When Minnesota first allowed direct shipments in 2005, people didn't think that it would explode the way it has. It's a $3 billion industry right now. Minnesota grew their direct-to-consumer shipping last year by over 12%, and it continues to increase. This bill sets up a proper regulatory scheme now that it is more prevalent, and we'd appreciate your support and happy to answer any questions. There's a technical amendment. I don't know that we need to do it. We've met with the tax committee chair, and this is principally a tax compliance bill, and I know he would like to see it. Eventually, whenever you make the motion to send it there, it's got a significant tax-related issue to it, and there's a technical amendment that we can do or do it later. So,
Mr. Carlson, thank you. I will consult with the tax chair and see when he needs to hear this bill. Until then, we'll lay it over, and then Absolutely. Let's take care of that amendment in taxes, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Very good. Anybody in the committee who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, any member discussion? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad to hear that folks have been working on this the past couple of years. And any bill that has the authors at the top as Representative Lesh and Representative Davids has to be a pretty decent bill.
Thank you, Representative Dean. I see one member of the public here, Mr. Chesick. Please proceed.
Chair Hobson, members of the committee, again, Tony Chesick, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. I just wanted to put on record that the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association also supports this House file. So thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Carlson and members who haven't been in commerce, I want to say this is the commerce way. I appreciate all the stakeholders getting together to work out their differences very much. With that, seeing no further discussion on the bill, House File 1909 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Madam Chair?
Representative, excuse me.
My
Mr. Carlson.
Carlson, that would have worked. My election certificate expired in 1987. Representative Nash wanted me to clarify one thing on the record where he thought I maybe misspoke on the distiller bill.
Mr. Carlson.
And I just told him I would make sure that we were clear that when I talk about being able to self-distribute, I was talking about their ability to sell their product to the customer and not truck it all over. And I told him I would make sure that I was clear on the record that that's what we intended, and so I told him I would do that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the clarification. Announcements to members, we will not be hearing House File 1033. With that, we have completed our agenda. I really appreciate people spending the time today, and we are adjourned.